भागवते वासुदेवाय ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय ॐ नमो भागवते वासुदेवाय So reading Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 4, Chapter 29, Text 54. This is a verse where it's prose, so I won't read the verse. It's a very big verse. I just read the translation. It says here, translation by Srila Prabhupada. My dear king, woman who is very attractive in the beginning, but in the end very disturbing, is exactly like the flower, which is attractive in the beginning and detestable at the end. With women, the living entity is entangled with lusty desires, and he enjoys sex just as one enjoys the aroma of a flower. He thus enjoys a life of sense gratification, from his tongue to his genitals. In this way, the living entity considers himself very happy in family life. United with his wife, he always remains absorbed in such thoughts. He feels great pleasure in hearing the talks of his wife and children, which are like the sweet humming of bumblebees that collect honey from flower to flower. He forgets that before him is time, which is taking away his lifespan with the passing of day and night. He does not see the gradual diminishing of his life, nor does he care about the superintendent of death, who is trying to kill him from behind. Just try to understand this. You are in a precarious position and are threatened from all sides. Purport by Srila Prabhupada. Materialistic life means forgetting one's constitutional position as the eternal servant of Krishna. And this forgetfulness is specially enhanced in the Grihastha Ashram. In the Grihastha Ashram, a young man accepts a young wife who is very beautiful in the beginning, but in due course of time, after giving birth to many children and becoming older and older, she demands many things from the husband to maintain the entire family. At such a time, the wife becomes detestable to the very man who accepted her in her younger days. One becomes attached to the Grihastha Ashram for two reasons only. The wife cooks palatable dishes for the satisfaction of her husband's tongue, and she gives him sexual pleasure at night. A person attached to Grihastha Ashram is always thinking of these two things, palatable food and sex enjoyment. The talks of the children both attract the living entity. He does forget that he has to die someday and has to prepare for his next life if he wants to be put into a congenial body. The deer in the flower garden is an allegory used by the great sage Narada to point out to the king that the king himself old age coming, right? First signs, you need glasses. To point out that the king himself is similarly entrapped by his surroundings. Actually, everyone is surrounded by such a family life, which misleads one. The living entity does forget that he has to return home, back to Godhead. He simply becomes entangled in family life, Prahlad Maharaj has therefore hinted, Hitvatma Patam Griha Andakupam Vanam Gatoyat Tarim Ashayata. Family life is considered a blind well, Andakupa, into which a person falls and dies without help. Prahlad Maharaj recommends that while one's senses are there and one is strong enough, he should abandon the Grihastha Ashram and take shelter of the lotus feet of the Lord, going to the forest of Vrindavan. According to the Vedic civilization, one has to give up family life at a certain age, the age of 50, take vanaprastha, and eventually remain alone as a sannyasi. That is the prescribed method of Vedic civilization known as Vanashram Dharma. When one takes sannyasis after enjoying family life, he pleases the Supreme Lord Vishnu. One has to understand one's position in family or worldly life. That is called intelligence. One should not remain always trapped in family life to satisfy his tongues and genitals in association with a wife. In such a way, one simply spoils his life. According to Vedic civilization, it is imperative to give up the family at a certain stage, by force if necessary. Unfortunately, so-called followers of Vedic life do not give up their family even at the end of life, unless they're forced by death. There should be a thorough overhauling of the social system, and society should revert to the Vedic principles, that is, the four varnas and the four ashrams. My dear king, women who is very attractive in the beginning and but in the end very disturbing, is exactly like a flower, which is attractive in the beginning and detestable at the end. With women, the living entity is entangled with lusty desires, and he enjoys sex, just as one enjoys the aroma of a flower. He thus enjoys a life of sense gratification, from his tongue to his genital, and in this way, the living entity considers himself very happy in family life. United with his wife, he always remains absorbed in such thoughts. He feels great pleasure in hearing the talks of his wife and children, which are like the sweet honey of bumblebees that collect honey from flower to flower. He forgets that before him is time, which is taking away his lifespan with the passing of day and night. He does not see the gradual diminishing of his life, nor does he care about the superintendent of death, who is trying to kill him from behind. Just try to understand this. You are in a precarious position and are threatened from all sides. Om Ajnanati Mirandasya Janma Janma Shalakaya Chakshuran Militan Jena Tashmai Shri Gurave Namaha Sri Chaitanya Manobhistam Stapitam Jena Bhutale Swayam Rupa Kada Mahyam Dadati Svapadantikam Vancha Kalpa Tarubhyascha Kripa Sindhivya Eva Cha Patitanam Bhavanibhyo Vaishnavibhyo Namo Namaha Jaya Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Gadadhara Shivasari Gaura Bhakta Vrinda Hare Krishna Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama Hare Rama 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 Hare Hare. So first of all, I'd like to ask your blessings to speak on Srimad Bhagavatam. I consider myself just a beginning student, so please forgive me for mistakes on the course. And if I say something which is not pleasing, please correct me as well. this part of the Bhagavatam has a very essential point, very important instruction for all of us. Maharaj Pratina Bahisat was having a very pious life. He was doing everything according to the instructions of religion, of the Vedic injunctions. But as it was studied before, he missed the point of Krishna. So he was doing so much effort just to get fruitive results, go to the celestial planets and enjoy there. And because of that, Narada Muni, as a pure devotee of the Lord, he's giving his compassion and instructing him how he can elevate himself. So in the first part of the allegory, he tells him the story of Puranjana. And he understands how the body works, how this machine works, what is it made for, what is the nature of the mind, what is the nature of family life, and what is actually transcendence in the end. So after he gives the analogy of Puranjana, he then explains devotional life to him. And he points out that devotional service is the highest element to be attained. But again, Narada Muni comes back to another allegory of a deer which is in that beautiful greenery, which that lovely breeze, not too cold, not too hot, the aroma coming from the flowers in the forest, the bumblebees in the air, that's such a romantic scene. The deer is there, very pleased in that circumstance. But he's not aware that just behind the forest there's a tiger. And just behind the tiger there's a hunter who's trying to kill him. That was the point which was brought out on Sunday by His Holiness Bhaktivedanta Purnaswami. That he's bringing back this allegory to show that the deer was not aware of what's happening. And Srila Prabhupada opens his purport with a sentence which is definitely a conclusion. He says, materialistic life means forgetting one's constitutional position as the eternal servant of Krishna. And this forgetfulness is specially enhanced in the Grihastha ashram. So, interesting to note, he says specially enhanced. So it doesn't mean that the other ashrams are not due to forgetfulness as well. So all living entities who are in contact with the material nature are subject to this forgetfulness of Krishna. And that is the root cause of us being here. Actually, in Jiva Dharma, Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur discusses with us that a jiva contemplating Krishna, but on the other side of the river, there was something which attracted the jiva. In the case of us, we were attracted by this other side. Krishna was there, but we were attracted to the other side of the bank. And we went there to see what was there. And analyzing the scenery, we came in contact with the material elements and became identified with these elements. And thus, our life started in this material existence. We could have, in the first life as Brahma, understood that this is not for us, that actually the purpose of life is to worship Krishna and go back to Godhead. Or it could be a second birth as the sons of Brahma, or a third birth as Prajapatis. But then after the third birth, we just go down in this 8,400,000 species of life ride. So here we are, perhaps on the end of this ride, because we are somehow interested to rectify this forgetful state of Krishna. Right? Now, it's interesting to note that this purport is focusing a lot on Grihastha Ashram, showing that the Grihastha Ashram has this possibility of entanglement very strong. So he is being brought up. And even there is a verse by Prahlad Maharaj, 7.5.5, which he actually says, the whole verse is here. Let's just see. He says, Tat sadhu mane sura bharyam dehinam sadha samudvigna dhiyam asat grahat hitvatma patam grihamanda kupam vanam gatoya charim ashayitha. O best of the suras, king of the demons, as far as I have learned from my spiritual master, any person who has accepted a temporary body and temporary household life is certainly embarrassed by anxiety because of having fallen in a dark well where there is no water but only suffering. One should give up this position and go to the forest, Vana. More clearly, one should go to Vrindavan, where only Krishna consciousness is prevalent. One should thus take shelter of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Interesting to note is that he's saying one who has accepted a temporary body and temporary household life. Now, in the translation, asat grahat, because of accepting the temporary body or bodily relation as real, thinking I am the body and everything belonging to the body is mine. So here what is being addressed is not the situation of marriage, but the mentality of feeling that this is what is me, and this is what is mine. This is my house. It is my family for me to enjoy. So once that position of enjoying controller is in place, you must suffer the consequence of taking that responsibility. So on one hand, the jiva cannot do anything because we are very, very, very small. We could actually put a couple of thousand jivas on the tip of our finger, right? It's very small. So how could we move muscles and air and do things? It's only Krishna's energies who are doing it. But because of our desires, because we have that Purush Bhava, we are actually thinking that it's us, the doer. We are the doers. So, but once you accept that you are the doer, you must take the responsibilities of that action. And that is where karma comes in. So you have that karma reaction, which is coming from accepting the Purush Bhava. So here, the mentality of accepting oneself as the controller and enjoyer, and the household life as this instance of I and my, it's my family, to enjoy those delicious dishes, and this is my wife to satisfy all my desires, that mentality, and also the mentality for the wife, this is my husband and he's here to satisfy all my desires of security and facilities. Both ways, is the entangling element in the material world. This is the root of our existence. Once we abandon, and that's what it means, go to Vrindavan. The meaning behind abandon this and go to Vrindavan is to abandon the Purush Bhava. Because no one can go into the spiritual world with the Purush Bhava. Right? Even the Mayavadis, when they accept liberation, they still have the Purush Bhava. That false, polluted consciousness, I am the controller, I can get liberated, is there. Therefore, he can get liberated, he can be spiritual, but not devotional. He cannot enter into the pastimes of the Lord, because still the Purush Bhava is there. So therefore, he must get rid of that. And the only place where that is possible to be dealt with is in Bhakti Yoga. Bhakti Yoga within the six systems of darshan, the six darshan, is the only Vedanta connected to Bhakti, is the only place where that is dealt with, where that element is taken from us. Because you identify as a servant of the Lord. And by identifying as a servant of the Lord, the Grihastha Ashram becomes a facility to enhance your Krishna consciousness rather than a facility to enhance your gratification of the senses. So, in the world, we are so enamorated by forms, because that's what the feminine is, the forms. Then because we are enamorated by forms, we think, so therefore Grihastha Ashram must be rejected. It's useless. The Prabhupada says the Grihastha Ashram is the basis of society. They are the ones who go out, who work 8-10 hours a day, give donations to the temple, so the other ashrams can live on them. You know, it will be very hard to propose for the renunciant order, now okay, now it's your turn, you go work 10-8 hours in a company, get the money and feed the society with that. That will be very hard. But if Grihastha Ashram is properly oriented, is properly situated, then it's very conducive to spiritual life. And gradually we'll come to the position where our realization will be so great that we will like very much to be in that position of fully surrendered to Krishna. And the whole family will work peacefully on that idea. But that takes a lot of contemplation and actually discrimination. What is the principle and what is the detail in family life? So how to connect everything in my house? How to connect that brush in the kitchen to Krishna? What is the connection? I need to connect every aspect of my life to Krishna. Why do I do this at this time? Right? And then, by doing that perfectly, one time will come that you understand it's so much trouble to do this. Wouldn't it be better just to do the direct service to Krishna? That's when this step comes in. Because you've done it so nicely, the mind is not thinking, oh, but if it was another husband, another wife, another house, another yatra, then it will be okay. But we're just thinking of the situation. The mind is the same. Our mind in the West, our mind in Mayapur is the same mind. We bring it with us. And unless you change, you purify the mind, you cannot advance, because the mind has certain levels. Actually, the mind has 5 levels. According to Patanjali in his Yoga Sutra, he defines 5 levels for the mind, which is quite interesting for us as Bhakti Yogis to have a look at his terminology. Because it's the same terminology we use. The first level, he calls it Chitta, which is disturbed. That means there is an equal balance of Rajas and Tamas. So because it's equal, right, the mind is hyperactive. Tama in excess lose the capacity of discrimination. So the mind is active but you don't know what to do. So you're just disturbed. The mind is just disturbed, looking for something disturbed. It's very common to see in young people, especially in the West, they're disturbed. They don't know what to do. They try this, they try that, they destroy this, they destroy a telephone booth, they go drink something. They are looking for something. They're just, the mind is just disturbed, fully disturbed. Then the second level becomes stupefied. When he comes home, he has drunk so many beers, he just lies. It's just inertia, vice, ignorance, lethargy in sleep. So his mind just went to that. It feels a little peaceful because you got home after such a long day, you lie back and you're contemplating life. You feel peaceful, but it's basically because ignorance is total. The mode of ignorance just dominated your mind. So there you are, appreciate. That's why it's said that two people are happy. The complete fool and the sage. The sage because he sees things as they are, and the fool because he's in a stupefied mind. So everything is no problem, right? Then you go to a higher level and you go to vikshipta, which means restless. Here there is a the rajas is a little stronger than the tamas, right? It's a little higher, right? So the maya runs from one object to the other, but it cannot sit in one place. That's why the vaishyas are like this. They can make business here, do things there, but the mind is running around. It can't really settle. As long as profit is made, no problem, we can run around, right? So we start to see how the stages of the mind is connected to our actual existence in Varnashram, you know? And that's the predominance of the mind. So the mind is going up stages. And if you are in a household where the tama and rajas are so prominent, it's very hard to come to the next stage, which is a valuable stage. And that's the point of potentially, right? So, but he also says an interesting thing about the third stage, restless. He says, this is an advanced stage of the disturbed mind. So we think that, you know, this civilization with so many facilities and cars and remote controls is very good because something was done. It was clean. It worked. You pick up the phone, it worked, right? It's not something which doesn't work. You try, you buy something, it works. Sometimes, you know, you buy something, you come home, it doesn't work, and then you're disturbed with that. So we see there is a progress. But then you come to the fourth stage, ekagra, which means one-pointed. So in Pancharatrika, it's pointed to Vishnu. Everything you do is pointed to Vishnu. Everything in the Pancharatrika is focused so that you remember Vishnu. You take a shower because you need to worship Vishnu. Everything you do, the way you dress, the way you purify yourself, is connected to that element, right? So this is because sattva has a predominance over rajas. So you start to see Vishnu in everything. Sattva element is more prominent, right? And the lake of the mind starts to become clear. We start to see things as they are. You know, you actually, the emotions are not so relevant as they were in the previous stage. Because now you start to actually contemplate life as it is. We are actually eternal souls. This material world is not my house. I'm here on a temporary vacation and I must actually go back to Godhead. That was Prabhupada's first sentence, back to Godhead. So you start, the mode of goodness is important because it gives that perspective where you can actually, from the mode of goodness, contemplate what devotional service really is. But in itself, it has no value. Just like an example given by His Holiness Siddhānanda Maharaj, he used to say, let's say you're going to travel. You make all the arrangement, the taxes, everything, right? That's the lower modes. And then finally you reach the airport. So you reached the place. You're right there. You can take the plane. But unless you board the plane, it's useless. You lost the plane. So the mode of goodness is that it can give you the right door to devotional service. But it's not it which will put you in devotional service. It's simply a situation which you can use. But what you do in the situation, that's the devotion. That's why in this verse is brought out the mentality in the Grihastha Ashram. Because if you are in the Grihastha Ashram thinking it's all about the facilities, it's all about what you have, what other people think of you, how you dress, what's your position, if you're respected, that won't take you anywhere. That won't take you anywhere, except work a lot to get those things. But if you are using that as a medium to glorify Krishna, to satisfy Krishna, where Krishna is the object of your actions, then it has a meaning. Because then that's the devotional element, right? So finally, we come to his fifth element, which is the controlled mind, Nirudha, sattva, pure sattva. Which would be the main characteristic for the brahmanas, where they would work. That would be the place for them to work, right? And that's why this verse is speaking so strongly on the Grihastha Ashram. Because this is the weakness of the Grihastha Ashram. It can be a Grihandakupam. a well which you fall. Just imagine you are in a very distant forest, you fall into a well, there's no one. You can scream, you can cry, you can dance, you can do anything. Nobody's going to come. Nobody knows you're there. You can be here in the Grihastha area, rightly situated, you're Grihastha, but you're just there. Time is passing. The hunter's there. The tiger is coming, but time is passing. And you cannot realize time is passing. Right? So you have so many sages and advanced souls here, but you cannot realize that time is passing. And you get absorbed in all those paraphernalia. So it can be a Grihanda Kupa. And who's going to save you? You're there. You dress. Apparently you're dressing nicely. So you're doing fine. So who's going to hear? Will you scream? You see, even the point, will you scream? So the Grihanda Kupa is very dangerous. Right? Because no one will come to save you. We are lucky that the Madhyama platform affords that element of compassion. And because the Madhyama Dikari is compassionate, he'll come to us and he'll preach to us. And this is what Narada Muni is doing. He's coming to Prachina Bhaisat and he's preaching to him. You're in a very unfortunate situation. You're threatened from all sides. But you cannot see that. So, therefore, take this perspective and go back to Godhead. Right? So that's the, let's say, the lucky side of the Grihanda Kupa. You might have a compassionate Madhyama Nikari passing on the forest, he sees you there and he stops and has a chat with you. But also, the other side of the Madhyama is that he should preach to the mangos which are very low. If you become a very difficult mango, why should he go for you? If you don't want to be engaged, if you don't want to do anything, there are other souls who would like to do it. So he'll probably take those souls first. Then after they are dealt with, if there's still some place, then you can come. You can take opportunity of that preaching, of that association. So it's a very dangerous situation because you can be in that well and then take that concept, it's for me, it's very deeply rooted, I'll keep here, it's comfortable, it seems green, the bumblebees is so attractive, the children are so pleasant, life is so good. Then, at the end of life, this has to be checked. That's the weak point. The strong point of Grihastha Ashram is that if someone is a renunciant, as a brahmachari, but he has desire, that's the best place to engage it. That's the strongest ashram to engage his desires. Because he can connect them to Krishna, and by connecting them to Krishna, he can eventually come to the platform of understanding it's about Krishna, not about my desires. It's about pleasing Krishna. This is the purpose of life. So that's the strong place of Grihastha Ashram, that you can engage so many. If you don't have desires, then the renunciate ashram is the strong ashram because you don't have to deal with any of that. You just have to deal with your own mind and your temple president, of course, right? But that's part of it, right? It's very simple. If you have a nice president, it's going to be very nice. So there's so many temple presidents around, so you have a lot of chance of doing fine. That's actually considered the most intelligent option because you don't need to go through the experience to actually understand who you are, who is Krishna, and what is the connection between us. So that's the first option. But then, if you can't make that first option, you can always go for the second option, which is equally good, and which will give support to all the other ashrams. So, a mistake we sometimes make is that, oh, so Grihastha life is a nonsense, therefore I should abandon, I shouldn't do my duties, I shouldn't do anything connected to it, and then the Grihastha ashram breaks, and you haven't addressed your desires, so you can't be fully a renunciant, you can't be fully a Grihastha. So you're just going around. Your mind doesn't get fixed on sattva. And finally, you don't get the realization that it's all about Krishna. And I've tried my best. I went to the best place, I went to Mayapur, I went to the Kirtan, Mela, everywhere, but still something is missing. Right? I was hearing from a devotee that before in Mayapur, in the festivals, they were still building the lotus building. there was a pile of rocks on one side of his head and a kind of bricks on the other. He was lying there. He was very happy. Right? If someone who had a fan was extreme luxurious element, if electricity was there, right, to work it. But today we have AC, heater, we have everything, cars, taxis, soon coming helicopters, anything is available. But still we feel that something is missing, right? Because the material nature will not give that satisfaction. It's only the devotional service which can give that satisfaction. And that's why this verse is so important, because the Upadeshamrita, his first verse is talking about the urges, right, which must be controlled, the urge to speak, right, the imposition of the mind, the tongue, the belly and the genitals. And here's what is exactly being addressed. And the first verse is saying, if someone can control that, he's a guru. Because this is the root of material existence. You want to taste something nice, have a nice experience with your belly, I'm satisfied, and finally enjoy sense gratification. That's what material life is all about. The reverse of that is you take prasadam, you feel happy in the association of devotees, and your energy goes to serving Krishna. So that's the reverse root of that. So the grihastha can use the same facilities, and instead of being engrossed in material life, he can go back to Godhead by associating with devotees, perceiving the importance of the renunciants in our life. Because who is going to lead us as grihasthas? Who is going to give us direction if not the self-realized souls? So it's very important combination. Vanashram Dharma is very scientific. The Lord has made a system which works, which is scientific, and it's actually very interesting. Grihasthas have their lives, address their desires according to Vedic injunctions, purify those desires, come to the perfect realization that we are servants of the Lord. The goal of life is surrendering myself to the lotus feet of Radha and Krishna. And then taking that perspective and then fully absorbing oneself in bhajan, like Bhaktivinoda Thakur did. He became this Babaji, wonderful, writing so many literatures which inspired our late Sampradaya, Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati and Srila Prabhupada. They're just taking that mood of giving Krishna to the world. So it's very important to balance. Actually, Bhagavad Gita has a lot of information on balance. How to balance life, how to view life, how to put oneself in life. Who am I? How can I be productive for Krishna? That's a devotional service. What is my offering to Krishna in this life? What are the attributes of this body which can be used for Krishna? What is the gift? And by knowing that, we'll be in a situation which we can actually manifest that. It's not the situation, it's not about being Brahmachari, Grihastha, Sannyasi, is about being the servant of the Lord. That's what Chaitanya Mahaprabhu says. Right? I'm not a Shudra, I'm not a Vaishya, I'm not a Kshatriya, I'm not a Sannyasi. I'm not a Brahmachari, I'm not none of this. I am a pure servant of the Lord. And that's our goal. That's our perspective. That's the north. I have to have that in mind. Where I am, that's the second point. Any route must have two points. Where I have to go, where I am. So if you fake, oh, I am not really here, and you think you're in a different position, it's very difficult to make a route. Because how are you going to get it right? You think you are in Calcutta, but you're in Mumbai, and you want to get to Vrindavan. So it's very hard to get the right train, to get the right route. So we must know where we are. And that's why our mind is important in this equation, because the mind, even though it's reflecting the material world, right, it tells where we are, what level of consciousness we are in, what we want from life. And by contemplating the mind and not identifying with the mind, but just understanding where we are and feeding the mind with transcendental knowledge, this knowledge will make the route and help you to cut the knot which is keeping us entangled to the material world. There's a hard knot in the heart, right? Now, one, I'll just finalize with this interesting information too from Patanjali. He says that the mind is like a lake and it can be disturbed. And he calls this disturbance modifications, which are of five kinds, right? He says many technical names, but I'll just say for you too. Valid cognition, invalid cognition, verbal cognition, sleep, and memory. These are modifications of the mind. And I'll just talk about the second one, which is invalid cognition, which means ignorance, avidya, right? So the element of ignorance is that we take what is real as unreal, what's unreal as real. So we think the body is real and the soul is something talked about, but it's not really there. So that's the common, as much as we go down in a materialistic line, it will be more like that. As much as we're a devotee, we see the soul is real and the body is just temporary, right? So he's saying that this modification, once the mind is modified, it takes that element, that nature of that modification. It's just like you modify milk into yogurt, it takes that element, right? So we are going through different modifications in our mind, and the purpose of yoga is to pacify the lake so you can really see who you are. So that's why the holy names is the only process which can actually remove that element of I am the controller and enjoyer, because it will put you into the domain, I'm the servant of the Lord. So the holy name is the element which will actually correct. Not because it's like a ratification element, but because the holy name is so powerful that even at the stage of Namabhas, you get liberated. Namabhas will give liberation. Bhaktivinoda Thakur is saying that if you chant Namabhas, it's liberated. But if you reach Shudhanam, then you get prem. So liberation is not a big question. It's just the standard setting of the jiva. That is this default element of the jiva to be liberated. But once it's in contact with material nature, it gets covered and the mind becomes disturbed. So that's why here, Narada Muni is trying to bring Maharaj Pratinabhaisat to the perspective of devotion. And that will come later. Okay, I think I'll finish here. I'd like to thank you very much for being very patient with me. And if you have any corrections, any comments, any questions, please. Someone? Oh, Mataji, okay.
Hare Krishna, thank you for your class. I guess my question deals with the very strong tone that Srila Prabhupada takes in this purport, and even in the verse itself. I know I experienced a lot of sadness in hearing it. And being in a woman's body as such, it just seems so like women are objects. So Prabhupada speaks very strongly about grihastha ashram. He doesn't speak about grihamedi, he says grihastha. And you spoke so nicely in a very balanced way about applying that grihastha ashram, you know, properly, that it's meant for purification of our desires. So maybe, is there something you can speak about that when Srila Prabhupada speaks very strongly about the grihastha ashram, and also that where does that leave women who don't take sannyas, who are not really brahmacharis, who aren't in those other, who actually, I mean, nowadays it's more of a modern thing that they take vanaprasa and stuff, But usually women are best situated in the grihastha ashram. So, like, that's not really their option to become sannyasis like that. So I guess those two things, like that, speaking about how Srila Prabhupada speaks so strong about the grihastha ashram and also a woman's place in that and how she can feel peaceful that, you know, she's not like an object and that she's also properly situated.
Okay, that's a very nice question. Thank you for that question. They're very mature. Senior devotees which can help me in the answer, I'll try to give some light from what I have realized. We are very attracted to forms, right? It's all about forms. If you see in a woman's world, it's about who is wearing what, aesthetics, it's about the form. So the woman would be the person or the body, let's put it that way, because the soul is different from the body, right? So we're not addressing you, but addressing a certain cloth, which that aesthetics can be bestly manifest, and where that feminine element can actually complement the masculine element, which will be taken by the male garment. So the male garment will be trying to function like Krishna does, and the female garment will be trying to function as Srimati Radharani does. But the problem is, dharma can be of three natures: dormant, manifest, or perverted. Once you get into the material nature, the dharma of the bodies, they become transformed. So the nature of this body is to contact the sense objects, and the female or garment will have this potential of giving pleasure, and the giving pleasure potential is the potential which can entangle. So just like if I say for you that a fur coat from New York from a special is gives that power to the woman, you know, she feels so powerful. And if you just put something bought in Navadvip full of glitter, gives another flavor, right? So we're just discussing flavors here. Now, if you take that feminine element and you apply in the grihastha mentality, then it's not this which is being addressed. What is being addressed here is the woman who is simply running the office of giving pleasure through the forms. That's where the object feeling comes. Because then there's an identification with that situation. I am this body, I am the woman, so therefore I am like this. But what Prabhupada is bringing out here is for him who is supposed to be enlightened so he can enlighten the whole family and the whole kingdom, right? He is identifying with the situation and just running the office of enjoyer and controller. So the higher purpose or the higher level for women is to become the servants of God just like men, because then there's a balance, and you won't find the same discussion on Srila Bhaktivinoda's wife. That won't be brought out so much. If she was like this, she was like a flower which was disposed, or any great acharya's wife, it's not, that element is not as much, even though you can take a higher nature or a lower nature within everybody's, right? A man can take the male garment, can take the role of I am a servant of the Lord, my duty is to protect, or I am the enjoyer, whatever survey is for me to enjoy. So the feeling of sadness can come from identifying with our specific situation. But as jivas, if you just look, in the beginning, Srila Prabhupada would have his female disciples preach in a group of his godbrothers. I think there's Jamuna Mataji. She was, he would specifically ask her to speak for this godbrother to see how much philosophy she knew. And they were quite brave. If you see how they established London, you know, Gurudas and Shamasundar Prabhu, all these great devotees, his grace, all of them, sorry, his grace, I have to correct myself in the etiquette. They were very brave. And it was like everybody was doing it together. Now, if you have, you have to make also a distinction that here the culture is very well understood and practiced. In the East is a different culture. You see, we, when I first lived in India in 82, my father was doing his studies, which is teenagers here in India. There was a young Indian with a Western mentality, so she couldn't really have friends in the Indian community, so her father asked her to stay with us in our house. She was like 22, she had a scooter, she wore jeans, she had a boyfriend. That was a big revolution in India at the time. She was highly criticized for that, for all her friends, but she thought it was cool. And she wouldn't pay the dowry to the man. She said, I won't give 10 paisa to a husband. She was like saying like that. She was completely against. I think she went to Canada, she got married there. Rekha. And all her friends would criticize her heavily why she wouldn't do that, because that was the Vedic injunction. So for them, the situation of being a woman, like Varnashram, it was natural. They wanted to be like that. You know, they wanted their father to choose their husband. They saw the beauty of the system. It was there. It was in place. Now, when we go to the Western Hemisphere, we are so connected to the lower stages of the mind that we actually identify very much with that. So it's a question of understanding that the beautiful element which Prabhupada is bringing out is that everyone is a jiva, independent of the body you are, male, female, and that jiva has the right for liberation. And if you follow the instructions given by the acharya, everyone will be delivered. So that's, I think, that's what I understand. If Maharaj would like to say, or Prabhujani was. Okay, right, so is that okay? You see, Prabhupada once, there was a bookmark done by one of his disciples. It's a famous situation. And he took it and he said, how can I refuse this service? Look how much devotion. You see? So for Prabhupada, him addressing here Varnashram Ashram doesn't mean in woman being the central element of Varnashram Ashram that he's rejecting Varnashram Ashram. He's simply pointing out that if you are in the Varnashram Ashram with the wrong mentality, it's extremely dangerous. That's what he's saying. That's what must be picked up from this point. Because you see, on the other hand, as I was saying, I see many grihasthas which have completely destroyed their family life, but they haven't got rid of their desires. So they're in a bad situation too, because they can't do one thing, they can't do another, and it's hard for them. They're struggling. Sometimes they even leave the association of devotees, thinking devotional life is not practical. And that's the biggest mistake, because bhakti can afford a solution for everyone. There is nothing bhakti cannot solve, because that's the original culture of the soul. It's our original culture. How can it solve all our problems? So it's because we are so attached to the material world, we think the material world in itself has a value. That's why we cannot see that bhakti will solve everything. Mataji has a question at the back. It's at the bottom, there's a little...
While reading Srimad Bhagavatam, I came to the realization that because being in a woman's body and trying to be comfortable during Bhagavatam classes that are addressing these issues, I just realized that basically this is a conversation between two men. Shukadev Goswami is talking to a king who is about to die, and he is supposed to become detached from material energy. And what else is he going to be talking about? And in which other tone would he be talking about ladies in a material sense than this? It's normal. If it was two ladies discussing on the bank of a river and one was supposed to die, then the conversation would be different. It would be about men and how they're this or that. So, and I actually spoke to my spiritual master, Krishna Kshetra Prabhu, about this realization, and he confirmed it, saying that it's a very good observation. And yeah, so I think it gives a different light on the whole conversation. And it's,
yeah, wonderful contribution, Mataji. I think it's very enlightening, because here the point is, he's about, not about, but he's getting old, and he's saying, okay, I'll arrange the whole thing, and then I'll take spiritual life. And he's now point, no, spiritual life should be now. And I had something nice to share with you all. I was talking to the wife of a very nice devotee, and he's about Vanapras moment, which is like an ashram which doesn't really show up, because it's kind of fading from grihastha, but it's never defined, so it's just something which fades away. But and I was saying, and he's starting to travel more, to be more absent from home, and I asked her, isn't it difficult? And she just said no, because actually now I'm so enthusiastic about serving, about doing things. I have so many friends, and we are doing it together for Krishna, and it's so wonderful. And I don't want him to think about me at the end of his life. So I thought it was an extremely brave and loved declaration, because she was actually loving the soul, that he should leave the body with the full absorption in Krishna. And that goes in the same direction. Now you see in other parts of Bhagavatam, and that's very important too, because Bhagavatam is discussing, we just finished soon, that Bhagavatam is discussing different topics in different areas. This area is about abandoning material entanglement. This is the main section. And that's valid for all of us. We should take that perspective. Okay. So, we'll end here. Srimad Bhagavatam Ki Jai.